Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Twin Arrows podcast. As always, I'm joined by my friend Timmy Long.
Hi, hey everyone.
And this week we have a very special guest. We have special guests every week, but this time it's a very special guest, Georgina Cooney. And you're going to offered to share your story, which many women would be able to relate to. But before we get into it, who are you and where are you from?
I'm Georgina Cooney, not George Cooney.
No, not George Clooney, no.
I'm originally from Kilwirt in North Cork, but I'm living in Whitegate now. I'm married 2 years to David Cooney, and I've a little girl, Rua. She's 16 months.
Rua is Irish for red.
It is. Yeah. It's fox as well.
That's a lovely, beautiful name.
It's nice. So she was born September, so we wanted to kind of autumn-y name.
I think we should start calling Rowan Rua.
Rua. It's boy girl. Exactly. So it can be boy girl.
What was it like growing up in Kilwirt? Quiet.
Grand. We're farmers, farmer family.
With cattle and pigs and things.
Mainly cows.
Yeah,
milking.
Go
so
away.
Yeah. So I have four brothers, one sister. So
Is it a tough childhood growing up on a farm like that?
Ah, mighty crack.
Is it?
Great crack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she'd be flying around in mud and, do you know, no worries.
I know.
Great crack.
You're like pardon the pun, but like pig and shit.
That's it, yeah.
There's always something to do on a farm, isn't there?
What it's good. Like, I loved it because I loved animals and, running around and freedom of it. Like, we could just go down the fields and get lost and...
Yeah.
And come back for hours, go into the neighbours, get fed.
Do you know what? That's how it was.
It was like ourselves as well. Like, we're from the city, but in northwest Cork City, you're like the city centre is right next to you. But on the other side, then is Blarney, Cloheen, Kerrypike, and the Lee Fields and the woods. And your Killeens is at the back of us, So we had the country on one side and the city on the other side. So we'd have been able to relate with that too, and heading away for the day. And
I done my own bit of farming when I was young.
Yeah.
We'd go up to Lee Valley and we'd pick the spuds out of the fields out there and we'd bring them home. Probably 10, 12, 13. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, bring them up home and sell them to the neighbours. Sorry, man.
Entrepreneurs.
Exactly. But you've a few siblings, you're from Kilwirt. Did you go through school? And
I did, went to school in Kilwirt and went to secondary school in Fermoy. And then went to college in Cork, moved up, went wild.
What did you do in college?
Did graphic design. Didn't know what I wanted to do, though. Yeah, I was just like... And one of my other mates, she picked CIT as well. I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Do you know, you're 18. We just went Lula up there. We moved up there.
Okay.
So, sure, we had a great time.
Were you living on campus?
No. Living in Glasheen Road,
up
by Cissy Young's.
Yeah.
So I was in college for about 3 years. I quit. I gave up.
After doing 3 years and
I gave up the first year. Did it till April. Couldn't do the exams. I was like, nah. So I gave it up. And then I started a new course in the College Comm in the September. So I actually didn't know what I wanted to do. I was just having... hanging out with my friends and stuff, like having a great time.
I suppose when you're that age and you're living in the countryside all your life around your parents, and then all of a sudden you're going into the city, you're living inside in your own place, you're going to
complete freedom, exactly. So I kind of didn't really take on the whole college thing, you know.
I was working with when I was working in homeless services there, I was working with a girl from Bear Island, and she was telling me when she went up to CIT, so first time ever on a bus.
No way.
Yeah, first time, and she, you know, anxiety around all the people, and you know, just like different, like.
Yeah,
I know. No, Kilworth is not Bear Island, but it's still, you're from a small rural area, and you come into the city. CIT is a huge campus. The college scene is big, and there's a lot of alcohol and parties. And I know people over in Glasheen Road, and they're not happy with the students.
Oh, stop! Yeah, exactly.
And did you find it hard to, I suppose, settle into student life because of the party scene?
I probably did.
I was just the course was the wrong course.
Could have been a bit of both, I'd say. Like, but definitely the freedom of being able to party and, you know, just have fun. And I really, really lived it up anyway.
Yeah. I often thought, you know, when I was on UCC campus, you know, as a mature student, like when you're a mature student, you know what you're there for. You have your goals and you're working towards them, and that's it. And I often looking at the young people and I'm thinking, how the fuck do they get through college? Yeah. There's so many distractions, the women and partying and drugs and everything, you know. How do they actually go to the exams in the mornings? How do they get through their assignments when there's so many distractions, you know? So
I think what I noticed out in the CIT, I think they scrape it through up until third year. But what I noticed then in fourth year is like they just pulled it out of the bag, and some fellas that just screw up their way through for 3 years are pulling out 1-1s. You know, between 17 and 100. And I say, what the fuck? And there's me, my ones have to drop in, you know, because it's ever getting harder.
Yeah.
But I think the maturity levels go up then as well.
Definitely. Like
after 3 or 4 years, you know.
I definitely wasn't mature enough to be in college. You know, I wasn't. Yeah. I was working part time then in the gate. Cinema. So sure, they used to have in the mornings, then like they'd have the run throughs.
Yeah.
Like back in, geez, when was that? 2004, around that. So it was all film. So they had to run them through. And sure, I didn't go into college any Thursday because it was Thursday mornings. They'd show all the films before they came out on the Friday. So I'd be in there for the day watching the films. I loved it. Same time of life.
And what did you do in the College of Commerce then?
I did PR and advertising, and I did nothing with that either.
And what happened after that?
There's
no such thing as wasted learning, by the way.
Yeah, that's
like, do a course, you didn't do anything with it, you still learned a lot. You know, so, but anyway.
Yeah, hopefully anyway. But I always had an interest in media, and you know, the media side of it, so it might stand to me yet. Like,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
But what did I do then? Oh, I went to America on a J-1, went to San Diego for the summer. Like,
explain what a J-1 is to people like us that would never have gotten any J-1s.
Yeah, I know. So it's if you go to college, it's you get the opportunity to go to America to work. So they give you get a work visa for America.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a three month job, like.
Yeah.
So there was a gang of us, and we said we'd go to San Diego for the summer. And this was kind of the last one before I kind of finished up with college. But I think around that time as well, it was kind of the thing that was done. Do you know, people would be like, oh yeah, go to America there for three months.
Yeah. And how was it?
So mighty. Brilliant. Sure, my bag got robbed the first day I was over there. Passport and the whole shebang gone. So I worked illegally for the 3 months over there, selling sunglasses and t-shirts on the side of a beach. Grand.
Ducky lucky.
I was one of those.
Fair play, sure.
All we wanted was a bit of money for a couple of cans and you know, it was great. There was 13 of us inside in a two-bedroom house.
Do you ever see the video of the Lucky Lucky in I think he's in Spain, he knows all the places.
I know.
I don't know what visions of you there now. Some Senegalese guy over on the beach in San Diego, and you're trying to and you know all the towns in Senegal.
I was scalded. I came back and I was like nearly a black woman, nearly. And mother was like, Jesus, and it was about 2 stone heavier.
And what happened when you got back?
Got back then, got a job in FCI. It's a factory in Fermoy. So I kind of fell into that job and was just kind of an operator inside there. So then after that, FCI, the kind of the what you call it, the crash came.
The economic 2007. Crash,
So FCI then was, it was kind of one of the first companies to close. So I was there 2 years. So I was one of the last people into the company. So they were letting people go, but they were given redundancy. So I got a couple of grand anyway. So me and my two buddies, my cousin, Jackie, and another good friend of mine, Grace, three of us said we'd feck off. We went to South America.
Nice.
To South America, and we went to New Zealand and Australia. So we got a one-way ticket. We said, good luck. See you later.
I'd love to go to South America.
Oh, it's a great spot. Brilliant. Even Mexico, the mines, 3 months there.
Them old buildings and stuff in the rainforest. I'd love to see all that.
It's a great continent. They're mad about the Irish. Absolutely love us.
Yeah.
What part did you just do? A few different countries in
South America? Yeah, we kind of did a couple of places in each country. Like we bussed a lot of it. Like we just got there and did overnight buses. We did Brazil, Argentina, Peru, Bolivia, Chile, and you need to have your wits about you, like you wouldn't be going up into the favelas Rio de Janeiro by yourself. Like we did a tour, but it was an organized tour with a person from the favela. And it was unreal. Like, there was kids, like, about 9 years old with machine guns, walking past us. And we were going, holy... Do you know, it's crazy, completely different world,
And but there's lawless, is it?
Yeah, but they have their own law, kind of, within themselves there, do you know? Yeah.
And then you went to Australia, then New Zealand?
Yeah, we went to New Zealand first and spent a year there. We were working and living. And then we went to Australia, and we went to Sydney first just for a week, and then we actually settled in Melbourne. So Melbourne is where we were setting up.
Melbourne is meant to be a rough enough city, is it?
Sure, I think anywhere is, you can find a rough anywhere.
I just remember watching a couple of documentaries about the gang scene, underbelly, the drug scene and all this in Melbourne, and I remember thinking, fucking hell, I thought Melbourne was quieter, but that's actually mad.
Do you know what stuck out for me about Australia was there was a lot of Irish men being killed from street fights over there. You'd always hear one every year.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's like the Irish are after drink, we can be mad and a bit messy, but I'd say the Australians can be fairly tough as well after a few drinks.
They are, in fairness.
And
they're
notorious for being competitive.
Mm. Yeah, and they're a bit arrogant as well.
That's the British, you know.
Jesus. We're going deep here, lads. Can one down the tube, small bit, please.
I kid.
Oh, stop.
But there's a bit of everything in the Aussies, A lot of the Aussies over there would have Irish ancestry too.
And they kind of treat the Irish a bit like we're second class a bit over there, we kind of do the crappy jobs in Oz, but I loved it over there, but mainly our group of friends and everything were all expats, they're all Irish and English and American, and I only had a couple of actual Aussie friends.
There's a lot of
they kind of stay away.
There's a lot of Cork and Irish people, a lot of Cork people in Melbourne that listen to this podcast.
Yeah, is there?
So hi to they make their presence known. A lot of people know, like yourself, that emigrated around the time of the recession and ended up just setting up shop over there, and have kids and that now.
It is
and
good.
They just like listening to the Cork accent because it reminds me of home. So hi everybody in Australia, New Zealand, and beyond. So
that's it.
What was it like over there? And what was the crowd? Was the big party scene there too for you?
Yeah, big party scene. There's a place called Revolver in Melbourne, in the city, and it's a 24-hour nightclub, so it doesn't close at all. So you could go in there, and you could be in there, like. Be in there for a couple of days, if you wanted to be like.
Just doesn't close, like it's
doesn't
open.
Close, yeah, doesn't close. Like there's a lot of security and stuff there, like, but people can be in there for days.
I would have loved something like that back in my drinking days. Trust me, I would have been barred after the first night. But
yeah.
I just liked it.
It so wouldn't have been Revolver for Timmy at all.
Revolver,
single shot.
Ouch!
But it is like it's a serious party city. Do you know? Like I was 27. I was 26, 27. When I was in there, so I was kind of you know you're in the height of. The good times and having crack and yeah.
And was that your local?
We lived in St Kilda, so St Kilda, the Revolver was up Chapel Street, kind of about half an hour away from St Kilda.
Yeah.
So St Kilda was mainly my base. It was kind of an Irish hub as well. But I was working in a bar there, and I did painting and decorating. That's what I was doing over in Melbourne.
Cool.
Working with all the boys. Yeah.
Happy days on the sites.
George.
Yeah. I hear it's meant to be good money, but the cost of living is very high.
Yeah, yeah. Good money and you could work and, you know, you'd make a nice bit. The cost of living is high.
Yeah.
But it is a good life over there. Mm-hmm. Do you know? You have the beach and... you feel like... It doesn't feel real, you know, the time I spent over there, it kind of didn't feel real.
It's like living on the set of Home and Away or something.
Yeah, do you know, you're kind of, I knew I wasn't staying there in the long term as well. Because I just, it's a bit too far away from family and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I had a two-year visa for there,
Nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we've set the scene now of who you are, where you're from, how you ended up there.
Yeah.
And you were sexually assaulted over there.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I was living in Melbourne about a year at the time, and I came back home for Christmas in 2009. So I hadn't been home in 2 years because of the travelling and stuff. So had a great time when I came home, met, you know, everyone and got to see my mum and had a great time. So... went back to Melbourne then, and I was going out celebrating my birthday. So my birthday is the 20th of January. So I came back, and we were going out that weekend for birthday celebrations. Mm. So we had a good gang, great gang of us over there, like a lot of lads from Dublin now, and good Irish crowd and whoever. So we started off at about 2 o'clock in the day. So drinking, wine, beer, anything I could get my hands on. Really, if I get going, I'm kind of hollow legs.
From a Wellington boat.
Yeah, hollow legs, do you know. Drinking all day and sure getting drinks off people then, do you know. And there's this shot over in Australia and it's called Agua. And it's like liquid cocaine, basically. It's green and it's so I had about about 6 of those or something, no idea, so absolutely bananas in pajamas. But my drunkenness, I can hold my I wouldn't be a floppy drunk or anything. I'd be a hyper drunk, so only my close friends would know when I'm actually kind of blacked out, because my body just keeps going, and I'd be chatting, do you know, but nothing's there.
Yeah.
We ended up in a nightclub anyway on Grey Street, and I'm familiar with that area as well, and my mates were upstairs, so that was grand. But I kind of blacked out around, I'd say it was about 2:30 was my last kind of recollection. And I remember talking to... the barman was actually, he was an actor that was in Home and Away.
So it actually is like living in Home and Away.
Yeah,
so.
It is. It is. So this fella, he was the cop in Home and Away.
Is he handsome?
He's all right. Like, but he's Zazzy. Zazzy. So that was grand. That was kind of my last recollection until I woke up in an apartment that I didn't know. And there was a man, like 65-year-old, like old man, and he was giving me oral sex. And okay, I was just like, I just froze. I was like, do you know the way I was coming, like sure I was coming, I was still drunk, of course, do you know? Yeah. But I was trying to compute what was,
is this actually
what was happening. And I was just, I kind of woke up and it was like a double bed and my legs were on the ground and I had kind of a dress on, like, you know, nothing, just a dress or whatever, but it was up around my torso. I swear to God, I was up here, like, I was looking down on myself and I was like, what the fuck? Mm. What's going on? What? I was like, George, this is you. Like, do you know, it clicked in my brain. I started going, we have to do something. Like, do you know, it was like, I didn't know the man. I didn't, like, he was 60. He was well into his 60s, like, bald head. Yeah. That's all I saw.
You're 50 years like, old, wouldn't you? Like,
what the hell is going on here? Like, but the complete out of body experience, like.
But that's actually common for people experiencing sexual assault, that out of body experience. That
I just couldn't believe
looking at the situation.
It's happening to me. Like, I was there going, what? That's you. I was, like, practically pointing down at myself, going, so I don't know how long that he was actually there, do you know? Because I don't know, just time kind of gets kind of altered or whatever, do you know?
When you're drunk like that, anyway.
Yeah. Like, sure, I was like, who is this? Like, where am I? And it kind of felt like I was in a movie then for a bit, because it was like a bedside apartment, so everything was there. Do you know, I could see a door, and I was like, even my heart was going down. I could see a door. So your man kind of came up off me and didn't really say anything, and I was kind of just like, I kind of, you know, I was wide awake then, like, and said nothing. And I was like, he got, kind of got up and went over. There was kind of a kitchenette here. And he, I don't know, did he say something to me or, but it was kind of all muffly. But all I could do was see the door. And I was like, George, it was like, internally, I was like, George, get the fuck out. Go, like, do you know, this, like, if that door is locked or if it's locked, we'll do something else. Like, I would have beat shit out of him, I'd say, if I had to. I would have done something anyway. But, like, I had no shoes on, I had no bag, I had no phone. Like, my knickers was up beside me on the bed. And before I got up, I was like, I actually picked it up. And I was like, you're not fucking, you're not keeping that. Do you know, I was like, fuck off, like, who do you think you are? Do you know, it was all going through my head.
Did he
just
talk,
a mile a minute. I don't know, did he fucking say, do you want a cup of tea or something? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Because he was going over to the kitchen.
Was he a Nazi?
Yeah, I think he was, yeah. Kind of a mixed, I don't know, it was kind of Greek Aussie.
Okay.
Like, I found that out afterwards.
I'd say the fear must have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, he could have been violent, but you like,
yeah, exactly.
And you hear about tourists and backpackers and that going missing in the bush and being, you know, there was predators in Australia, like
exactly,
in other countries.
Like,
there is too.
Sure, I was there in my head and was like, I'm going to be a statistic.
Mm.
Do you know, I started my mother, I was like, oh God, so, like, it was literally all going through your head. But I was like, at that moment, I was like, I have to get out, I have to go. Just get away. Like, you know, in Australia as well, they have those kind of double doors. So kind of a fly net. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to pull that or else I'll have to run through it. But luckily the door was open. And I ran out. Like, I just literally got up off the bed. Sure, I was fucking, I'd say I was, you know, I was half pissed anyway.
Yeah.
But ran to the door, doors open, ran out, didn't know where the fuck I was, kept running, saw steps, ran. It was about half 11 in the morning, or half 12 on a Sunday morning, and ran out. I was in a car park, didn't know where I was, just ran. There was an arch, kept running, no shoes, sure looked like a fucking mad woman. Like,
did he come after you?
No. I got out onto, it was like a, I went under an arch and came out onto a street, and there was a good bit of traffic and stuff. Sure, I was trying to like flag down a taxi man, and I was hysterical. Now, hysterical at this stage, because I think it hit me what happened, and like I didn't know if I was actually raped either. Yeah. Do you know?
Yeah.
I was,
sure don't know how long he could have been at.
Yeah, exactly. Walked, like, because the last thing I remembered was kind of being in a nightclub to being in this man's house, and was I'm like chattering.
I know, you're like, you see the nerves in you when you're speaking.
Okay.
Like,
that's okay, it's normal to feel something like this, you know.
You're speaking well anyway. Mm. So, well, I know you're speaking very well.
And like, that's 11 years ago, do you know?
Yeah. And you did you flag somebody down?
Yeah, eventually, like, got out there, and there was taxis passing, and sure there was one, and they were like, I'm not picking up this fucking lunatic. But I'd say about two or three taxis kind of passed in, and fella pulled in, and sure I was shaking, like, and he was, are you okay? And I was like, no. Yeah. So I'm not. I was like, can you, I didn't know where I was either, like, so I was like, can you bring me to St. Kilda? And he was like, yeah, you know, he was actually so lovely. He actually reminded me like of a Cork taxi man, do you know?
Yeah.
Do you know, like your dad, like coming in, going, I'll bring you home. Half langer.
Like, have to get sick and
do you know? But so thank God this fella actually took me home, and I was like, look, I have no bag. He saw I had no shoes, or I had no shoes on me, or I was hysterical. So I was like, look, if you get me to the house, my friend will pay, like. And he was there, your grand, he was there. So I didn't know where I was coming from either. I didn't think to ask him. And eventually got back to St. Kilda. So it was about 1 o'clock in the day. Went upstairs. My mate was upstairs, Beefy. He's one of my fellow friends, like. And sure, I met him at the door, and I was just, he was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I couldn't say it. He's like, George, are you all right? And I was like, no. And he was like, will I ring Grace? And I, Grace is one of my mates that I was in the nightclub with, but lost her. And she arrived, she's like, George, we lost you last night. And I was like, I know. I was like,
they had no idea,
shit,
like,
story. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was just so hard to believe when it happens to you. Do you know, like, kind of anything, I suppose, it's when it happens to you, you're like,
I know.
What the fuck, like.
Did you go to the police?
Yeah. But straight away. Them. Yeah, straight away.
And where were they with you?
They were brilliant, actually. They were good. Excellent. Like, the lads saw how, they saw it was pretty fucked, like, and I just wanted to know what happened. Do you know, like, so we went straight to the cops in St. Kilda, and they actually treated us brilliant from the get-go. And sure, I went there, and like, when I got to the house, I actually took off the dress and stuff, because I felt fucking manked, like. But I kind of knew then that I couldn't have a shower, because just in case, like, from, you know, from watching all those fucking...
Yeah, because the forensics will want to examine you.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so,
did they?
Yeah. I had to go through, did all that, like, went to the hospital, and can't stop chattering, lads.
That's fine.
Without going into the gory details, what's it like, the forensic process, you know, for women out there, I suppose, that maybe have been in that situation but didn't want to go down the road?
Yeah.
Like, what's it like? Is it...
Well, I definitely tell people, if it happens to anyone, go tell someone, like, because it's not, you can't get away with it, like, do you know? Like, I'd recommend anyone to just go to like the Cork Rape Crisis Centre, or like we went straight to the cops, and they actually, like, I went and got the forensic thing done, and they actually left me alone for a day so I could kind of get myself together. And I think it was the day after, like, I'd go in and do a statement. So I was there for about 6 hours, I'd say, because I had to bring him through the whole day from when I kind of started drinking. So they were looking at me and they were like, Jesus Christ, how much
drink? You know, typical Irish woman. Like,
how much fucking drink after? But they, like, afterwards, actually, there was like, this was a few months down the line, and the guards were like, they couldn't get over that I didn't have to be pumped, because they said the amount, my alcohol level was through the roof, like, and I was like, that was, yeah, crazy.
Were you able to give a description of him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was he arrested?
Yeah, we found him, like, we went through, so it was a mad old process, so about 2 weeks afterwards, two cops came over, and they were in plain clothes, and they took myself and Grace around my whole statement. So from where I started at 2 o'clock that day, they drove to the house I was at. We drove to everywhere that I'd been, just to, they wanted to rejog, see if there was anything in my memory. And they were able to tell from how much the taxi men, because we never found that taxi man afterwards, but from the amount that Beefy paid him, they were able to see from St. Kilda the radius of how far that'll get you. So I remembered kind of hazily, like, that there was a big bridge. I remembered being in a bridge. Like, that's how I'm bring you back, actually, because how it actually ended up in your man's car was because I thought he was a taxi.
Okay.
So he had a kind of a yellowy car, and he was parked outside the nightclub, and all the taxis were there. So I thought I was actually getting into a taxi. So that's how I actually ended up.
But he wasn't a taxi?
No. No.
Did he masquerade as a taxi, or did you just jump in and he took you?
I could have just jumped in, but like he... There was up the road from that nightclub, it's called Grey Street, and there it's kind of notorious for prostitution and stuff.
Okay.
So there'd be prostitutes and
stuff.
You could
have ran
there.
Into another creep's car. Yeah,
I know.
But you got a nice guy.
It's so mad though, because, you know, like, I was in my bubble as well. You know the way you've the place where you go out, like, you know there's dangers there.
Yeah.
But you don't think it's going to happen to you, basically. But that's how I ended up getting into his car, because there was CCTV footage of me coming out of the nightclub at 5 in the morning, bouncing out the door, no shoes. I'd like, so my shoes must have been left, I must have left them in the nightclub, and my bag and everything was found in the nightclub. But like, I look fine, I look okay, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't thrown on the ground or anything, but kind of kills me, because, you know, my awareness is totally gone, like, I would be quite a chatty person, like, when I'm out. I talk away to anyone, like,
typical Irish person, really.
We
talk to anybody.
I kind of thought in my head I was getting into a taxi, and I remember it being in the car then, an older man, like, and I was sitting in the front, and I remembered going over the big bridge, and that was it then. Like, I'd nothing after that.
But they tracked down the guy based on the bridge?
Yeah, so the bridge, and from the money, the tariff, you know, for they were able to see whereabouts. So there's a place called Mooney Ponds, and they drove out there, the cops did, and they're like, this is during the day now, like, so they're like, George, if you see anything, just say it. Like, anything at all. So we're passing, I kind of saw a red brick and saw a car park, and then I saw kind of steps. I was like, lads, I'd say pull in here. This kind of is looking familiar. And I saw an arch.
Mm.
I was like, oh God. I was like, oh, the anxiety was flying at this stage. So we parked up in the car park and they put a hood over me so that if your man was out, he wouldn't know me or whatever. So went up the steps and I was like, oh Jesus, this is it. Like I was there going, that's his gaff down there. So he's in there. So they're like, all right, put us back into the car and went home that night. And the cops came then the day after with a big thing of identification of all the people living in those apartments. Sure, I spotted him straight away. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, I was fucking delighted.
And was he known to the police?
He was known to the police for picking up prostitutes. So he was known for picking up prostitutes. So
God only knows what he was doing to those women.
I know.
Like, he could have been doing that because, like, prostitutes tend not to report stuff like that because it's just like an occupational hazard. And I know from working in addiction home services in Cork, you know, that sex workers are exploited and abused all the time. They don't report it because they're the most vulnerable. And a lot of the time, police have no interest in helping prostitutes. You know.
But it's sad, so, like,
even though, like, if he was carrying on like that and he was known for picking up prostitutes, he'd probably a sexual predator, you know, for years.
Yeah.
Mm. You're actually very lucky he didn't hurt you badly, like.
I know. And like, I kind of, like, I found out, I knew then afterwards that he didn't, like, I kind of, in my own head, I knew he didn't rape me, do you know, that kind of way. Because you kind of know if you have kind of sex or whatever, but I kind of wanted to black it out of my head as well, because I didn't want to think that he was after doing that to me, do you know. So, yeah, I was fucking delighted, like, I couldn't believe it that we actually found him, like, and, you know. So, like, all the drama then of kind of, you know, telling my family at home and stuff.
How did they take it?
Ugh, sure. They were just worried about me, like.
Of course.
Four brothers. Sure, they just wanted to fucking come over and kill him, like. Mm. But I actually, like, they wanted me to come home and I actually refused. I didn't want to wreck the whole experience that I had. And
you didn't want to give them that power,
my visa was until the end of the year. And I think I wasn't ready as well to actually come home and face everyone, you know, because when it actually happened, I decided that I wasn't going to keep it a secret or, you know, it wasn't going to be brushed under the carpet or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, told my whole family and my close friends and all my mates that were in Melbourne, just because to be aware of the dangers and, you know, fuck it, like, happen to anyone.
Do you feel relieved that, that he didn't have sexual intercourse with you?
Yeah.
Like, would, you know?
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. It's like a different form. It's like a different,
like, to
different side.
I just
of things,
woke up and he was down there, like, and I was there, and I don't know how long he was there because I just froze. But I was delighted when I knew that it wasn't.
And this guy done all, like, this in his own senses, like,
back at his own home and all.
Yeah.
No, he didn't give a shit. Like, no, he's probably after.
He actually told the cops that I wanted it. Like. Said you wanted it.
Was he convicted?
He wasn't, because I couldn't go through with it in the end. It took about a year. Like, we caught him and everything and they put him on the sex register. And the cops, they asked me, like, did I want to prosecute him? And so I came home that December. And it was about February. Like, I got on really well with the cop. He was lovely. He was like a detective sergeant. He was lovely. Like, he used to ring me and everything from Oz to see how it was. And he was like, what do you want to do? And he goes, do you want to prosecute? Do you want to go? Like, I would have had to come back to Australia and go to court. And I kind of read up on sexual assault cases in Oz. And it doesn't they don't get convicted, like.
Like here.
Yeah. It's a bit, do you know, you'd be like putting yourself through fucking people badgering you going,
it's probably,
you know, I just couldn't. I was like.
It's like the one crime where the victim is put on trial as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the victim, the defence will go through your whole
that
character.
That goes through my own head, like, I'd be there going, Jesus, did I fucking, do you know, did I encourage him? Or, but it's like, no, I didn't. I was like, I go out in a night to enjoy myself. I don't even go out in a night to, like, if I scored with a fella, I'd be like, happy days. But, like, it wouldn't, I'd go out to have the crack.
Yeah.
And, I know, this is like 6, 8, 7 year old men would be like, no.
Have you any advice for girls and women out there that might be drinking like that today and might be have this idea that, oh, she went through that, but should it never happen to me?
It will. It could, and it could happen to anyone, anywhere, like in a village. Do you know, it was over, like I was very drunk, like, do you know, I was intoxicated. I'm sure I didn't know what was going on, and I don't know, the mix of drinks, stick to one.
Yeah, and you're entitled to be drunk, like, you're entitled to be langerated.
I know,
that's not an invitation or consent in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You know, and even if, like, even if you were paralytic and you jumped into his car and willingly went to his home, that's still not consent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way you come out of his gaff and got into the car that you thought was a taxi, you could have come out of the nightclub and got into a car and he could have taken advantage of that, you know what I mean? But still, like, still fucking sexual assault, you know what I mean?
No, but it's in your own head, you're going, fuck it, why did I do, you know?
I think Irish people are notorious for beating themselves up no matter what, whether the circumstances are not their fault or not. We just have that bred into us that we blame ourselves no matter what for whatever situation, you know, whether it's just a shame thing.
It's a shame, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. Jesus, like,
you know,
sure, it's like, oh, man, am I going to go home now? Like,
did you do any therapy or anything?
I did, yeah.
When you come home?
When I came home, yeah. I actually went to the Rape Crisis Centre in Cork.
Yeah.
And they were excellent as well, I must say. They were, because I kind of lived at home. I went back home to my mum for a while, and it was tough. Like, when I actually came home, it felt like I had to kind of revisit it all again.
Mm.
And just facing your family as well is big. Do you know, you're kind of, feel like you let them down kind of job. Like, Christ. But sure, they were brilliant, and I kind of got counselling then as well, because I kind of suffer from, I kind of get highs and lows, so it's kind of called rapid mood cycling disorder. So I only got diagnosed with this now last year, but I think in the time that happened, I was in a manic state, like I was going through a bit of a manic episode. So, because when you're kind of manic, you want drink, like, you kind of stimulants, like,
yeah.
And I was definitely, like, looking back now, because of the counselling, and like, I went to the doctor, and they recommended me to a psychologist. And so I think, like, looking back now, I'm there going, I could have been in a manic stage around that time as well.
So that condition predates the sexual assault?
It does. Yeah. So I kind of only just figured this out recently.
Yeah.
I've had highs and lows all my life.
Does that make sense for you now?
It does a bit, like, you know, I think it kind of did with the drinking, like.
Mm. What was the drinking today?
Not too bad, like. I've definitely calmed down, and like, I don't mix the drinks anymore.
No more shots of
agua. No shots, lad. No more shots. Like, I'd only drink now, kind of, sure, not too much, like, but.
Yeah, just a sociable drink.
Sociable drink, yeah.
And what was the mental health, and is there any like post-traumatic stress or anything like that? Do you have nightmares? Does you have flashbacks?
No, in fairness now, actually, kind of, I talked it out, you know, with counsellor, talked it, And yeah, I kind of put it to bed. I was like, do you know what, this happened now. I've only, like, I met my husband the December when I got home at House Brady. And sure, we're married now, like, 2 years. And, like, I had only one other person since that incident.
Yeah.
So it did kind of, I found it hard to...
Yeah, be intimate with people.
Yeah.
Or trust, exactly. Yeah. And I suppose your husband must be a great man.
He is.
And congratulations on patience. The wedding. Is there any smileys?
Just one,
Rua. Oh, so yeah, it Rua. Does work out, Rua.
Rua, red Rua.
Yeah, but I don't know, my advice for anyone who's gone through any kind of sexual assault, report it or tell someone, don't keep it to yourself, like, because it'll eat you up.
Yeah, and in the services in Cork, the Rape Crisis Centre, they're based in St. Patrick's Quay.
Yeah.
In the city centre, the Sexual Health Centre as well in Cork. Mm. And even your local community services, they'll all signpost.
Like, I kind of thought, you know, because it was an oral rape, like, you know, it's not any less than anything. You still didn't consent to it, so...
I'd say a lot of that goes unreported.
Yeah.
You wouldn't hear much.
You wouldn't.
But look, you live to tell the tale.
Thank you.
And well done.
You're a brave woman, Georgina. Like, your story, and I could see the emotion in your face.
I can relate with the waking up after blacking out and thinking, what happened, you know? Waking up in cells and waking up with blood on you and waking up, you know, with fucking missing.
Our white coats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just waking up, not knowing what you've done the night before. Just, you know, and you're waiting for something to tell you what you're after doing, you know, because it's just it's with me when I had a drink, it was just complete blackout.
Yeah.
A complete blackout. I wouldn't know where I am or what I'm after doing until the next day, you know, where you wake up. Either in a bush or a bag of black bags or a cell, you know,
scary,
covered in blood, fucking, you know, it's ridiculous. Like, in the fear of something like that, it's just kind of,
I'm even getting the, feel like I'm getting the chills,
I'm
getting the adrenaline down. Like,
but if you're drinking to the point where you're blacking out, You've answers now as to why you were kind of doing that. But if you're drinking to the point where you're blacking out and you're not remembering, that's when you really need to be asking yourself, what am I actually doing here? Because that's not normal behavior. That's very dangerous behavior. No, it doesn't excuse anything that you still shouldn't have been sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
But people that black out, like me, Timmy, and yourself, you end up in situations where you've no control over them. You know, and you have to mind yourself. And if you're drinking, if people that are watching this are drinking to their blacking out, just maybe say it to somebody, seek out help. If somebody thinks they've been sexually assaulted, go and say it to somebody and seek out help and find out. And if people want to show you love, can they do that online?
They can.
Instagram.
Yeah.
I'll tag you. I'll leave your handle in the description of the video. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on and being so brave and honest.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Thanks to Timmy.
Cheers.
Thanks to Rowan on the decks, Georgina, and we'll see everybody again next week.
See you
later.
Bye. Thank you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.